All right, here's a 30-second commercial. I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more in car insurance. This company, Geico, who's been with Spikes Car Radio for the longest time, has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is Geico. Go to geico.com. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm out of time.
Now, Podcast One brings you Spikes Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
All right, here we are, Spikes Car Radio, on a lovely Friday here in L.A. Part of the fun of the L.A. Auto Show is not sitting in traffic trying to get downtown to it. They have a lot of great events. It's just really hard to get there. But that a lot of our friends from across the United States, from across the world, come here. They descend upon L.A. to look at Fords and Chevys. I don't really care about that part. I like having them come into the show. And one of those guys is here. His name is Jason Torchinsky, sitting right across from me, senior editor of Jalopnik. This is from your bio, Jason.
Okay.
Running. Now, that means the type of cars you have in your collection.
Mm-hmm.
73 Beetle,
yep.
2006 Scion XB,
mm-hmm.
90 Nissan POW,
mm-hmm.
91 Yugo GV Plus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, the Plus. That's important.
Not so running, the 73 Reliant Scimitar.
That is very not running.
The 77 Dodge Tioga RV.
Yeah, that's not running at all.
It's good to see you, man.
It's good to see you, too. It's been a while.
This is great. I'm happy you're here. I've been following your, I want to get into all your stuff. There's
good.
A book, there's videos, but last night I'm very confused about something that happened down at the LA Auto Show.
I think we all are. I think we're.
I don't even have to introduce it. Why don't you know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
I think you're talking about a truck or something that could be a truck. I think you're talking about the Tesla Cyborg truck, which looks like
correct,
like maybe it came out of a PS1 game. Kind of. It's a low polygon thing. I'm very puzzled by this vehicle.
Okay, let's. Back up to, is this the pickup truck that
yeah.
This is the thing he's been saying.
Yes.
We've got an electric pickup truck, okay?
This is the electric pickup truck he's been teasing forever.
Okay, now if you guys, you got to stop if you in front of a desktop right now. You got to Google this thing and know what we're talking about.
You really
have. Chances are you've seen it. It was trending on Twitter this morning.
Yeah, it's.
First of all, when I woke up this morning and turned on my computer and went to my front, it was there. And I thought, well, this has to be a – it was last night. It has to be a joke, right?
That's what everybody was thinking. Yeah, there was a lot of commentary. When we were all watching it, the Jalopnik people all together in our little Slack room, everybody was wondering when they're going to pull the crude body thing off
correct.
And reveal the actual truck. But there is nothing under that crude body. That's it. And I've got a lot of theories as to what's going on here.
Okay. So, but for now, we're certain that this isn't a bait and switch. Let's make the media look stupid and have some fun.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think it is. And I think if you dig down, I think there may be reasons why it looks the way it does.
Well, I was looking at the profile and I was looking at how that. This kind of bend line here along the door. What do you got, car journalists, call that line there?
I guess that's the belt line. That's technically the belt line.
The belt line, okay.
Yeah.
The belt line wasn't even. It looks even, but when you examine it, the gaps in the doors and the belt line.
Yeah, I mean, Tesla's known for a little bit of play in their panel gaps
I know,
and things
but
like
that. Let's be honest. This looks like something Mythbusters made in about a week.
That's key because there are no complex stampings or curves in this thing. Have you ever seen a Citroën FAF or these things made for developing nations starting an auto industry without complicated presses? It looks like cars like that, like what you'd do if you had no ability to stamp steel. The steel is crazy thick on this thing too because it's not corrugated, so it... It has to be.
And so help me understand what I'm looking at. Is this part of the – I've noticed that a lot of car journalists like yourself in the know really kind of they say Tesla's a pyramid scheme. They accuse them of putting out these big announcements just to get more funding and then delivering. But it looks like they kind of ran out of money and just slapped something together in shop class.
It does look – I think they had a lot of trouble building cars. I think they found through the Model 3 and the Model S it's hard. And I think genuinely they wanted something easy.
This looks like a lunar vehicle.
You want to know what it looks like? I'm going to show you a picture, Spike.
It makes the Bollinger electric.
Look at that. Okay, so the Bollinger – we should talk about the Bollinger.
Okay. Well, let's go back to this picture. So that's – what am I looking at right now?
Okay, this amazingly is from a 1978 issue of Penthouse, of all things. And we're looking at a picture of a truck that is almost exactly the design of the Tesla truck. This is – okay, so you know the Brubaker box, that old kit car from the 70s on a VW pan?
I know.
It's like a little crazy van.
I remember the movie, Brubaker.
There's a guy named Curtis Brubaker who's an auto designer.
Okay.
Back in 1978, he designed this. It ran in an article in Penthouse because I guess mid-wank maybe you want to break and think about cars of the future. And it is dead on the Tesla truck design.
That's it. So that's the Brubaker.
I don't know if he had a name for this one. It was supposed to be like a combination van truck. It had like a roll-up thing. Look, it's even got a ramp.
How
just
do
like
our listeners find that right now if they want to? Because it really is a dead ringer for this design.
I wrote an article on Jalopnik at the moment. It's a deep dive into the Tesla pickup design, and I have this right in there. And this was sent to me by Curtis Brubaker himself. So this is – not only is it kind of goofy and weird, I'm not even sure it's all that original.
Wow.
It's
a head scratcher. Now, shortly after they debuted the truck, then, you know, the story, which doesn't seem like they have the story right, is that the windows broke on it, but they were intentionally trying to break the windows to show that they were bulletproof, but then they smashed.
Yeah, it's all so good. In some ways, it's just such a gift.
It appeared from my point of view that the whole presentation was surreal and like
completely.
Acid trip. Right?
So, okay, for one thing.
Were you there for it?
I wasn't there because they did not invite us very specifically. We actually did talk with another writer about should we dress up like catering staff and try to show up in there.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because we saw it all live stream. So the thinking was for some whatever the hell Elon Musk reason, he wanted it to be bulletproof and he said the glass was like shatterproof, bulletproof glass. And then it was hilarious because they threw like a big metal ball at it and the glass shattered immediately. So that was already hilarious. And they decided, well, that window shattered. Let's do the one next to it. And of course, it shattered also.
So it didn't work.
Not like you would want it to. It shattered. So, yeah, no, it didn't work.
What was he doing? I didn't watch it. What did he do? Was he embarrassed?
Oh, yeah, he was embarrassed. And
what did he say?
I think he said something like, what the fuck just happened, I think. I can't remember exactly. But it was something along those lines. And then he tried to keep going like, you know, no biggie. But, you know, it was hilarious. It was it was the equivalent of like the computer going blue screen during the, you know, demo kind of.
You know, I just had Ed Niedermeyer on.
Oh, yeah.
Who wrote that delightful book. And
yeah, that's right. You wrote the Tesla book. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I keep drawing these parallels between our current presidential administration and Tesla. There's a relationship
strange
there.
Strange overlap. That Venn diagram.
That I've been trying to, you know, quantify and verbalize without it being political, just the way they manage things.
Yeah, there's a certain.
And this really takes it again to this weird moment that I can't quite explain.
The why. Like, why does he think we need a bulletproof pickup truck with shatterproof glass that you can fling a steel ball
That's
into?
That's what made me think the man with the blowtorch was playing a little prank on us. Was just a moment where we're going to have some fun with everybody. We're going to let them, you know, cry and bitch and moan, and then we're going to go see how stupid you are. Here's the real truck.
If it is a joke, they're bold. Like, they're doing a long, long
Just to be
play.
Clear, as of this moment, because this show may not air for a few weeks.
Yeah, as of this moment, this
it's
has
the next morning, and there's no joke. There's been no reveal.
Seems to be it. It's a fascinating thing. I mean, look, on the one hand, I love Tesla and the fact they keep giving us these wonderful gifts of madness. Like, it's not boring. And the truck design is not like every other truck. And I think American truck design or modern truck design needs a kick in the pants. It has gotten weird and stagnant, but this is not necessarily a better design. Now, Bollinger's a good example because they're making an electric truck. They also have – apparently they don't own anything that makes curves. It's all just rulers and lines.
Right,
but they've made a very usable truck. You've seen how the front end opens up and you can put – because it's got basically a second bed up front and you could shove like an entire tree through the center of that truck.
Right.
And that's actually useful. Like there's a reason to make a truck look and work like that.
My questions for them were not that. It also has the appearance of something made in a shop class.
It looks crude. The Tesla truck looks crude.
And I wonder It's a New England outfit, right? They're from Boston.
Oh, Bollinger. It's crude, but it's a little more charming than the Tesla truck.
But I just wonder.
Ways.
My second question to them was, where do I get this thing serviced? If you guys are in New England,
yeah,
you know, what am I doing in that situation? Because Christian Bale mentioned that he wanted one, and my producing partner wants one, and we all think it's cool.
I like them. Yeah,
yeah, we're all interested, right?
Right.
But you're right. Like, when I look at that, I go, wow, what a masterpiece compared to what I just saw.
Yeah, well,
this new DeLorean thing that came out last
And I think the reason it's stainless is because he doesn't want to paint them.
So what is the price point? So it's a...
They say, like, just at under 40 is what it'll start at. But, you know, like, the Model 3 was supposed to be 35 grand, but good luck finding one.
This from behind, it's on jalopnik.com. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Where's the pickup, though? I guess...
Okay, so it's got a cover that supposedly some... I don't know where that cover goes. Maybe he's got teleportation technology and they teleport it into orbit until you need it again. I don't know, but it goes away somewhere.
Unique.
Can you imagine loading? Look at the sharp corners in that thing. You've loaded stuff into trucks before.
Yes, I have.
So you know how you kind of get banged around? Sometimes you're leaning up against the bed and muscling something in. There's so many points in there where I feel like your abdomen would just get punctured.
This was my next question. DOT standards, right? Now the front of every car is supposedly designed to shovel pedestrians out of the way,
yeah.
Right? This one clearly is not.
Cleaves them in two neatly, so it's just done.
Right? It doesn't seem like any attention was paid to DOT regulations.
No,
right?
It looks painful. Like, it looks like if you're in it, it could be painful. It's all sharp edges and...
But right, they can't just do that,
there's
right?
There's no mirrors on it either.
There's no mirrors, there's no bumpers.
No marker. Then maybe marker
lights. So could we call this a concept? Did he say it was a concept
and
not a finished?
The impression I get was this was what the truck is going to be, but clearly it's a pre-production truck. It's got to be.
But you know what I'm saying about DOT regulations?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of reasons. Yeah.
Right. This can't even be close to the real truck.
I'm positive it hasn't been tested or gone through any of that stuff yet, because no, I mean, that there's like a crease in the front that looks like it gets rid of pedestrian injuries because it just dispatches them immediately.
Yeah.
It's like a euthanizer for pedestrian accidents.
God. Well,
I don't understand. And honestly, it just doesn't seem like a useful truck.
No.
Can you imagine loading something over the side of that thing?
Well, there they've got another crazy.
Yeah, they have that. They made
ATV in the
They
bag.
Showed an ATV, like electric ATV, which is fine. And then they had the little ramp.
Yeah, it all looks like 1960s sci-fi movie.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Like in the background of, like, and there's any number of background movies where they build fiberglass things quickly on like a VW pan, and they're all these angular things. You know, he wanted to be like Blade Runner style. But even the Blade Runner, like, spinners hadn't, you know, it just seems crude.
Is
and strange.
Blade Runner that good? Isn't it one of those things?
I mean, it was a dystopia. That's the important thing to remember. If this is the future he's hoping for.
I never really liked Blade Runner. I have to say, it never really – I watch it and I go, I don't get – I mean, I understand it's an okay movie, but it doesn't blow me away to the point where I got to make my life about Blade Runner.
I don't know if you want to make your life about it. It's not a happy story. Like, if you're looking for, like, this is the future I want
to
create,
I tried
Blade
to like
Runner
it.
Isn't it.
Right. It's not a good movie. When I watch The Godfather, I go, my God. I watch Star Wars. You go, you know, it resonates. Fast yeah. Times at Ridgemont High.
It's
Flowers for Algernon. You know, there are lots of great movies in the world around that era. Where's Blade Runner? The 80s? I watched that over and over, and I don't get what you like about this. I like Harrison Ford.
I don't mind Blade Runner as a movie. I like Blade Runner, but I don't ever see it as like, yeah, I wish that was our future.
We're going to make Blade Runner the podcast.
L.A. was a miserable, rainy dystopia full of advertising and replicants and dismal misery. All right. I don't, yeah.
We'll take a break right now. We'll come right back. So how do you know your motor oil is good enough to protect your engine? Well, you don't, but one brand does, because they've literally gone the extra mile. They test everything. I'm talking about our friends at Valvoline. We love these guys. Valvoline is the only motor oil brand in the world with an engine lab completely dedicated to testing motor oil. They take their products and the competitors' products and run them through the gauntlet. I'm talking thousands and thousands of miles. Then their engineers and technicians take those engines apart piece by piece to evaluate exactly what happened. Carbon buildup, they check it. Seals hold up, they check it. Did the engine perform like it was supposed to? They check it. And most importantly, were the critical engine components protected? So when Valvoline is formulating motor oil for your engine, they know exactly how it performs and what protects it best, because they've seen the results firsthand. I use Valvoline oil in my old cars. I love them, and I love their stickers. We know Zuckerman loves them, too. It's why I trust Valvoline in my car, and it's why Valvoline has been trusted for more than 150 years. Head on over to Valvoline.com/Spike.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
And we're returned that quickly. By the way, you were one of the first people on Car Matchmaker when we had a set. Remember that?
I remember. There was a couch and everything.
You came onto the set, and what were we talking about?
We were helping a young woman decide car, what
you
car
gave
to
us
buy.
Car buying tips.
Yes.
The simplest car buying
tips. You know, looking at what I drive, that's in hindsight probably not something people
But that's okay.
Do.
You came representing Jalopnik. Yeah. I liked having the association because I was, and still am, mostly an outsider kind of looking in on the car industry, and you guys were the real deal.
We welcome you.
Nice enough to come on, and
it was delightful.
Huge fan of Jalopnik, and you were giving advice about what to buy and what not to buy. As I recall, it was stuff like don't show up at the car dealership not knowing the car.
Yeah, oh, right, because it was like dealer things, like be ready to walk out, all the usual.
Be ready to walk out.
All that stuff.
If
like,
you haven't made progress after 5 or 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, don't be afraid to meet. I think we mentioned dog food at some point. Like knowing that the dealer might have to eat dog food that night was okay.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't let him
stuff your heart full of
don't
steel
let him
wool.
Tell you a sob story about himself.
Right,
like,
exactly.
I just got divorced and feel bad for him. They were all great tips. I really liked
solid
it.
Solid tips.
And then you, at the time, you were in L.A. and you moved off to
North Carolina.
You're in North Carolina now.
Yeah, for various family reasons or whatever. That's why I own that ridiculous RV. I bought it out here for $5,000, and I used that to go across country, and it was amazing.
And you now are driving mostly odd, weird cars. So here's where I'm confused about you, because I follow you everywhere, and I like all your posts about your little boy and the fun cars.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff I rarely relate to. But on Jalopnik, what are your shows now? I know you write for them, but you have little TV shows.
I've got two main shows that are regular ones. I've got Jason Drives, which is me driving strange cars. Fundamentally, that's what it is. I find interesting cars, and I convince people to let me drive them around. And that's the best thing in the world. I love it. And I have very good relationships with like the Lane Motor Museum in Tennessee. And they have a staggeringly good collection of weird-ass cars. And they let me drive almost any of them. And it's fantastic.
You seem to really like those drives.
I love those drives.
Why?
Because they're things I normally wouldn't ever get to drive. Usually they're one-of-a-kind things. And I have a really perverse love for bad ideas. Like really shitty car ideas. There's something that just gets me.
Why don't you love the new Elon Musk?
Well, this is an interesting question because there's a certain kind of – there's a humility about certain bad idea cars I like, a humbleness that attracts me. Mm-hmm. Elon is not humble. That car is like arrogant and bad. It's like an idiot who thinks he's tough and won't shut up about himself, where I like the cars that are just kind of like hapless fuck-ups that you can't help but love.
Right. And so give us some of those. What are your favorite ones?
Well, the reason I want a Yugo, for example, it's partially why. Like I was given a Yugo as like a present, but I feel like it's not as terrible
who gave
as everyone
you a
says.
Yugo as a
it was passed down like a guy who used to write for Jalopnik named Freddie, who also has a big YouTube following now. He gave one to one of our editors, Mike Balaban. Balaban had a kid, so his wife said it just didn't want the idea that their child may end up in that car, so she made him get rid of it. He gave it to me, and I drove it down from New York to North Carolina.
It can't be worth much if you guys are giving each other cars.
Oh, it's worth nothing. It has negative value. It's like giving someone a CRT television now, right? It's like a burden that takes away their overall worth. But I love it, and it's you know, the design is fine. Like, there's nothing that terrible about it. It's just they cost under $4,000 when new, and nobody treated them well. But it's weirdly fun. And the scariest thing is, it's the highest horsepower car of my daily drivers that I own. It's the highest horsepower.
Yes, at what horsepower?
67.
67.
So I have like
Volkswagen Beetle.
The Beetle. My Beetle has two carbs, so it's more than the usual. But I think maybe it's 50, or I'm sorry, 60 if I'm lucky with two carbs. My Nissan PAV, that's a Japanese domestic market car, under a liter engine, makes 53 horsepower.
Wow.
So yeah, the Yugo.
Have you ever seen this Yugo phone right
there? Oh, there was a whole art show that did just Yugo cars, and I think that was part of it.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's actually – so there's a
I
weird –
I think I'd rather have the Yugo phone than the Yugo
Yeah,
itself.
Yugo phone would be good. There's a weird thing – so there's like a group in Serbia who's doing a documentary about Yugos, and they brought an original Zastava Koral, which is what they call the Yugo there. They drove it from there, you know, as much as you can drive, all the way to the U.S. And then my friend, a guy named Tori, who used to be like a big Beetle guy, or he still is, he suddenly got into Yugos, bought that Zastava Koral. Corral and another Yugo, and he bought a whole batch of like original new old stock Yugo parts, which is how I just fixed my Yugo because I got what might be the last in-box Yugo alternator in America, and I shoved it in my Yugo so I could get it running. It's one of those things that's rare and has zero value.
You wrenched it yourself.
I did. Oh, yeah.
So what happens when you run out of parts on something like that?
Most – on a Yugo – well, there's a lot of Fiat overlap.
Oh, there is.
There's a lot of Fiat overlap because it was basically a Fiat 127 kind of modified. When you break down in a Yugo, which I have already plenty, I learned that you get no sympathy at all.
No.
Like people will stop the side of the road, realize you're in a Yugo and just think, well, what the hell did you expect? This is what you get, dummy.
Okay, so that's the one show, driving the weird, odd little
odd things.
Cars.
I drive amphibious cars, propeller-driven cars, anything.
I like that stuff, yeah.
I love it. It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
It's eye-opening. I drove a few in Car Matchmaker. Mostly I was just, you know, the BMW Asetta. I was really down by most of the tiny micro cars that I drove.
Well, you have to put them in context. Like, you have to really think about what they were for and
with
how
bubble
minimal.
Cars, I really didn't even see how you could drive them a few blocks.
That's the amazing thing. People commuted to work in those things every day.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I don't know. I drove, you know, like a Messerschmitt cabin roller, which is an interesting one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've driven Isetta's Scuda cars. I drove – so you know about the San Premi cars in France?
No.
Oh, I love – okay, this is a category of cars I love. I've had
– it still feels like it's getting hot in here. I feel like hot heat is blowing down on us right now. What's happening? If Zuckerman were here, he would kill us. Zuckerman, my co-host.
It's his birthday today, I heard.
Well, it was, yeah, back then. But this is airing a little later. Yeah, he's away, actually. Where are you? I think he's in North Carolina.
What's he doing in North Carolina?
Visiting his daughter, I think, or South Carolina, one of those places.
We're the good Carolina.
We wish him a happy birthday.
Yeah,
he's
happy birthday.
67 today.
Wow.
And he's down to 38% body fat, so he's doing really well.
That's very exciting. Good for him.
Yes.
So, okay. So, San Premi cars. I want to explain these because they're fascinating.
Good.
So, in France and other places in Europe, if you screw up so badly in life, you get so many DUIs, you get your license taken away, or you're too young to drive 14, there's a category of vehicle you're allowed to drive, and they're called San Premi's cars, which means no permit. So, you can just drive these things. You've screwed up so badly.
This is currently.
It still exists. It's been around. So, when they originally wrote these laws.
So, wait. You get arrested for drunk driving.
Yeah.
And they say,
so
okay,
many times.
Now,
your license is gone. You can only drive this. This. Now, what they were thinking of when they came up with the law originally, it was like 50cc maximum engine. They, in their heads, they were thinking, moped. You're going to drive a moped, you chump. That's all you get to drive. But French engineers in like the 70s figured out within the parameters, you could build a car of sorts that fit these incredibly limited parameters. And they ended up with these crazy things with bodies made of like porta potty plastic. I drove one called, I drove one that had like a gullwing door in one side and a regular door on the other. It was made of like plastic. It was staggeringly crappy. Like it was.
What are they called again?
It's San Premi, like SANSPERMIS cars. And I, the one I drove was called a Mini Comtesse, and it was it's barely a car. And I drove it out in regular city streets in Nashville, and it's terrifying. You're basically wearing a plastic garbage can over your body, and there's like a tiny moped engine by your butt.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
So they're essentially moped-engined cars.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, these, man.
Yeah, and they still make – there's modern versions of these.
You look like
things.
A drunk in this car.
You basically are because you're
– Yeah, you're on display.
Yeah, you're on display.
Very much like a habit trail, like something a hamster would live in and drive.
Yeah, an animal is a good – yeah, that's maybe
look at
more –
these guys.
Yeah, these are modern ones, so these are already better. Like
they should just put Drunko on the side.
Yeah, because that's who's in there. You're either so old you can't drive, so young you can't drive, or so drunk you can't
drive.
I love
this idea.
Yeah. And
this scarlet letter vehicle.
Right. But
we need that in the United States here. That would be great.
It is, because it's like your last chance. You've fucked up everything else. This is your last chance to drive.
And we can just crash into it like kickballs and they just go flying off the road.
Yeah, they just bounce around. There's no – I don't think they meet the usual crash standards because they're assumed to go too slow.
Right.
Or
these
they devalue the lives of the people.
We're okay with these people dying.
Yeah, that's
the
what
drunks
saying.
And the old people.
We're fine with it.
This is fantastic. I got a fantastic idea.
Yeah. So there's that show. I get to drive things like that. And then I have a show where we wanted something to crank out that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have me in my basement. And I've started this series. It's just me in my basement full of old crap. And I talk about car-related stuff. And I also have a weird, huge, big collection of old like 80s and 70s computers and video game systems and
I
things.
I like that.
And I work those into things as
so
well.
So what is the idea that Jalopnik will become its own app and media site? Is that it? Or is this just content to kind of go
just give the people
shoulder content, as we call it, to the writing?
It's like the writing's the core, but like people do like watching the videos, so we just want to crank out as many interesting things as we can for people to, you know, make the pain go away. Just enjoy.
You know, I have to address the controversy going on with you since you're on the show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think the listeners would say that I was remiss if I did not bring up your hair.
Oh, yeah.
whole story of your hair.
And we should make it clear that we are on a podcast, so anybody who's afraid they may have to see my hair.
And I'm looking at your hair.
I know.
Right
you
now.
All right? Do you need a moment? You want to rotate your chair around?
What happened? It was a year ago, right?
A year, almost exactly a year. Okay, so.
And I remember weighing in on Twitter about it, but go ahead and tell everyone.
This is important. So we were actually, it happened, interestingly, we were at a place in Detroit called Monroe, and they're a fascinating place. They do strip downs for car companies. We were doing a very serious video. I want to be this clear also. We were doing a serious video where we had a Model 3, a BMW i3, and a Chevy Bolt, tearing them down, deep technical dive into it, all kinds of amazing information, and yet 90% of the comments on YouTube were, that dude's hair is repulsive, and I can't watch any of this.
Repulsive?
Well, I got people said they were disturbed. They said they couldn't watch it. There were downvotes for it.
YouTube is a horrible place.
Well, yeah. The level of anger is what really got me. Like,
yes.
Like you think maybe pity. Maybe people could just say, dear God, I'm so happy I don't live under that hair.
Yes.
But it was anger. It's like, how dare that person?
So your hair overshadowed the entire video.
It did.
You just describing it does sound fascinating.
It was
pulling these things apart. So, yeah. And then this debate, this lively debate began.
Yeah, like, should this man have hair? It's basically, has he earned hair?
What did your followers, the viewers of this video, what were they pointing out about your hair?
Okay, so I'll describe my hair to those of you. And again, if you're somewhere where you
Everybody
might hurt yourself or something,
what we're talking
about, but if you're, I would recommend be somewhere safe, sit down, and just breathe deeply just in case. So I have curly hair. It curls on its own. It makes, if left unattended, it will form these coils.
Yes.
And in college, like every dumbass, I grew out my hair long, and it was basically like a bunch of old phone cords on my head, just coiled around. Now, that's just what the hair does. I don't deliberately curl it like a lot of speculation
was. It's not that. I'm glad we're talking about it.
Me
your
too.
Hair looks perfectly normal except for one place on your head.
Yeah, okay. So I get this long lock of, like a long coil of hair that just tends to grow.
It hangs in front of my face. Above your glasses, on your forehead.
On my forehead. And that's the big thing they had
problems
with.
It looks like a 3-inch phone cord.
Because that's the type of
but
coil
why
it is.
Not just cut that off?
Sometimes I have done it on previous occasions. I have had just short hair all around.
We were talking about Spinelli. Remember the Mike Spinelli?
I do remember Spinelli's hair. Absolutely.
You can Google that, the before and after.
Yeah.
And then he said, I'm gonna grow up now and I'm going to have a gentleman's haircut.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote to you that this happens when you get successful. When people are looking at your face a lot.
Yeah.
It happened to me when I first went on TV immediately. I mean, hours after people
it's
said,
rapid.
This is what you look like. You kind of look like an old lesbian, Spike. You kind of look like Ellen DeGeneres. You know, they don't hold back and they go, here's what we like. You're wearing an Undertaker's suit. What's wrong? You know? And they give you quick feedback. It's also like a signpost for, hey, I'm succeeding and I'm becoming known. And you do have to make adjustments based
you
on
do.
That
I mean, there's
feedback.
Yeah, you can't be
because
too
you don't
sensitive.
Want to overshadow your video. So then again, I guess I put the question to you on behalf of
why
your fans.
Why haven't I cut my hair?
Why not just cut the strand?
A little bit
just
of
get
spite.
Rid of the strand.
I mean, I don't
it's because not, it's just one of those things that allows us to enjoy you more.
Well, that's you're not
you know,
wrong.
Mike, if I look at Mike Spinelli, who's a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Before I knew him, I did wonder about the hair, and it made me harder to watch his stuff when the hair was long. I just went, why would he keep doing that to us? And as someone who works in television, I know how sensitive audiences are. They're sensitive to weird stuff. It's odd.
It is.
Sometimes even just wearing glasses breaks that connection with people, and you have to go, I can't wear glasses. And I'm not saying you have to do that, but little things, if you take these little steps to help your audience watch you a little easier – they like you. That's, you know, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's,
you know, there's someone on TV who's very, very famous who recently had a little work done to the face. And I turned on the show and I saw the new face and I went, thank you. I've been having trouble with your face. And you took a little step and did a little tighten, and now I'm kind of watching you a little more, right?
It's valid. I mean, it's an entire.
You know, we see it. I see it all the time. It's like it's a little thing that they do to make it easier for us to watch them. And I
right.
think for you.
Maybe this should be my gift to the people.
The gift to the people would be to take the phone cord
and cut off the phone cord.
Cut it off, frame it.
Yeah.
To the world, I've heard you folks. I know you like me. I know you like my content. And
This
is for you. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas.
It would require a level of attention to my hair, keeping my hair trimmed that
but
I'm not.
This, look, this is the problem with writers becoming talent. Okay?
Right. They don't get that
You're
commitment.
Talking to a guy who hosted his own late night show who came out of the writer's room, right?
Yeah.
That network marched me in front of stylists and they said, can we give it to you straight? I said, please. They go, you don't know what kind of pants to buy. I go, no, I don't.
Well, that's kind of...
The 90s glasses. You're a 90s glasses guy. It's 2006. The hair is stupid. They went through me, and I said, as long as you don't make me stylish, I'm fine. But they pointed out about 10 things that I was doing wrong.
But you had professional step in. See, there's a difference now. I'm not going through traditional
TV. I'm now
TV.
A professional telling you.
Yeah.
You are
so
on,
this is it. This is my intervention, maybe.
All of you guys listening, Spinelli and everybody else, he already knows, but everybody, Chris Harris, the whole crew, you guys are now TV talent. You're now media talent. You're now content talent. We don't need you to be Jimmy Fallon level stylish. None of us want that.
Yeah.
But we do want you to clean yourself up a little bit and get out of the writer's room. That's all. And it's not, you know.
It's valid.
Hurt you, right?
All right. Well, maybe you'll see a new haircut in the next couple weeks.
All right. We've got Alex Roy coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Calling in about AXE.
Who doesn't
minutes.
Have I've hair got, problems.
No. I wanted to – we got to plug your book.
Oh, yes. Please.
Robot, take wheel. Take the wheel. Autonomous driving. I'm looking at the link. They left the out.
They
Thank
did.
Thank you, Amazon. Look at that. You can get this book on Amazon.
Or a local independent bookstore.
Local independent book. It's a real book,
it's
ladies
real.
And gentlemen. Hardcover. Kindle, audiobook. It's available everywhere. Where would you prefer these people buy it?
Personally, if there's a local bookstore that's independently owned, of course, buy it from them. If not, and you're just lazy. Amazon's
now, wait, it says
fine.
Here you're a producer of Jay Leno's Garage.
Yeah.
Is that true?
It is true.
Holy
yeah, that's
shit.
True. Look, Jay blurred
no,
my
I
book.
Saw that.
Yeah, no, I do. I like it's like a side thing. I help figure out what cars they're going to drive, and
wow.
I sometimes do a little writing. And
that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, he's
it's
a great
such
guy.
A great show. No, I know. He's the best. Tell us about the book. Why are we buying this book?
Okay, I think there's a place for this book because autonomous vehicles are one of these things that we've been hearing about for a while and everybody thinks is a very big deal. And I wanted to write a book that wasn't like – I said most of the books out there were like either very techno-focused predictions or descriptions or they're – I wanted something that talked about more how it relates to the culture of cars, how it relates to humans and driving, and how it's going to change things. And I think the fundamental way we think about autonomous vehicles, it's an interesting problem because this will be the first mass introduction of real robots, like not Roomba level, like the robots that could kill you if they got angry enough, into mass society. And it's going to get weird. Like, there's going to be all kinds of things we have to do. And I think there's a lot of misinformation about autonomous vehicles.
There is. I can't make heads or tails of any of it. We had Ed Niedermeyer, and he was talking about all of that. And he was saying, like, the Google cars work great, but they're $500,000 kind of airships. You know, they need that level of technology in a way that Tesla just doesn't have. You know, if they're going to sell a reasonably priced car, they can't do it,
no.
right?
And the thing is, you can't buy an autonomous car now. They did a study back in October of last year where they asked people, can you buy an autonomous car? And like 71% of people globally think you can go out and buy an autonomous vehicle. You can't.
You can't.
And that's
right.
a dangerous thing to think.
Yeah.
And I know Tesla – I feel like Tesla is guilty of this a lot. So the most you can get is what's called level 2 autonomy. And level 2 autonomy is where it can do a lot of things – but at any given moment, the driver has to be ready to take over because it will fail without – it'll quit being able to do its job without any mm-hmm. failover. So imagine this. And people – you know, we see videos of people in Teslas sleeping at the wheel reading. There's been wrecks because people – it does enough that it makes people think it's doing everything. But if you hired a chauffeur and that chauffeur said, I'm a great driver 85% of the time, but at any moment I might just forget how to drive. And then I need you to jump in and grab the wheel if you don't mind.
Yeah.
You would not nap in that car.
No.
But – that's exactly what people are doing when they nap in a Tesla. And I think the problem isn't technological, really. The problem is human. If something does 85% of the work, that's a kind of boring work on a long highway drive, are you really going to trust yourself to be like ready to go right away to take over? You're not. People don't work that way. And I think it's a real problem because these things, it's called autopilot. They have on the Tesla website, it says full self-driving technology. That's very misleading statements about what these things can actually do, and it ends up with people getting hurt or doing stupid things.
I've said, and for listeners who have not used any of these driving technologies, that I find it to be one of the worst things I've ever used because it I'm not driving and I'm not resting.
Yes.
I'm in this kind of purgatory.
That's exactly right. You have to keep your hands on the wheel and look out the window. Why don't you just drive the car at that point?
I find it very frustrating.
It's a bad space to
use it. I drive press cars every week, and whenever it's there, I give it a second to see how it works. But I always get the same uneasy purgatory, anxiety.
It's not a good place.
I don't know what I'm doing in this. I'm in a gray area.
You're exactly right.
I don't know what this is.
And that's the fundamental problem with all level two technology.
Right.
Is it's not doing any one thing right. It's
like I won't say who it was, but I used the self-parking mode.
Oh, yeah.
I've always said, if you can't park your own car, then don't drive.
Yeah, why?
But
yeah.
I had the kids in the car, and I said, let's try this self-parking mode. So it scanned for an open spot. We're parallel parking, right? It stopped. They said, now put the car in reverse, and it promptly drove about 60 miles an hour onto somebody's front lawn, right over a curb. It went bum, 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 and I went, oh my God.
Yeah, we're ready.
And the kids laughed.
It's hilarious. I mean, then Tesla's got the summon thing, the smart summon.
Yeah.
If you had a 3,000-pound remote control car you wanted to play with in a parking lot, the cops would tell you to get the hell out of the way.
That's right.
But that's effectively what they're doing. They're not ready. I don't, and it's... The key takeaway is what you just said. That space is not a good space to be in.
No,
it's halfway
not.
Between.
Yeah.
I was in.
I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think you need the option in a new car.
It degrades driving skill.
Yes.
I was in Sweden driving Volvo's autonomous vehicle, and I was on a Swedish highway. The car was doing, it's pretty comparable to what the autopilot is. It was doing 80% of the work, and I realized I was looking around at stuff around me and not paying attention. It was terrible driving. Terrible. If anything quit or cut off at that moment, I would have been really hard pressed to grab control of that car again, and I don't want to be in that space.
Yeah, sometimes the different manufacturers. It depends on who you have, but sometimes they slalom between the lanes. Good back and forth. You're technically staying in the lane anyway.
Yeah,
this is Jason Torchinsky. His new book, Robot Take the Wheel: The Road to Autonomous Cars and the Lost Art of Driving. His show's on Jalopnik. You got to check him out. Very interesting, smart guy. Used to write for The Onion, right?
I did. I was an idea writer for The Onion.
Idea. I love it.
Yeah.
You want to stick around and let's talk to Alex Roy because he's got a lot to say about autonomous cars.
I love Alex. Let's talk to him.
When we come back on this very special holiday edition of Spike's Car Radio.
Oh, boy.
I don't even know what holiday. We will have Alex Roy, who just made a film, Apex, The Secret Race Across America.
Oh, yeah. Alex loves that.
Did you go to the premiere?
I haven't seen it yet. I didn't get to go to the premiere.
I tried to make the Secret Race down to the premiere and got in traffic and turned around. We'll be right back with Spike's Car Radio. Hey there. It's the back half of the NFL season already. Can you believe it? Bittersweet moment, unless you're a Patriots fan like me. It gets more exciting this time of year. There's so much great football behind us. But the good news is there's even more football on the horizon. The NFL playoff push, college football playoff arguments, and soon enough bowl season. If you're looking to add some excitement, make BetDSI your betting partner. Use BetDSI's live betting platform where you can watch all the events and even bet all the games until the final whistle. And guess what? I got a promo code for you. Here it goes. Write it down. Are you ready? Get your pencils out. Spike101. New members get 100% bonus match using the promo code Spike101. That's double your money to start winning today. BetDSI has been paying winners for 20 years, my friends. They're top rated on betting review sites. You can use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash this week, and they have the fastest
biggest payouts in the industry. Simply play, win, and get paid. Remember, when you're signing up, use promo code SPIKE101. And once again, it's betdsi.com. Use promo code SPIKE101 and get this limited time 100% bonus offer to make some extra cash. It's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
Welcome back to Spike's Car Radio. We have Alex Roy calling in. We have Jason Torchinski in the studio. Alex, are you there?
Hi, Alex.
Right here, guys.
How are you? You sound tired.
Well, I am a little tired. I was at the LA Auto Show, and I flew to Miami for an autonomous vehicles conference, and I'm tired of flying.
We were just talking to Jason about his book, In Autonomous Cars. I follow you on Twitter, and you're always so funny and angry, but then you got a Tesla. I'm so confused as to where you stand, first of all, on the company Tesla.
Well, what's your take? I have one, a Model 3.
I know, but it seemed like for the year prior to that purchase, you were attacking them.
It's good to know what you're getting into, though. I respect that, Alex.
Am I wrong about that?
Well, to be clear, I love the car, not a huge fan of the company. I love the spectacle. I hate the BS.
Let me stop you right there, because most people who don't like a company won't buy their product. How do you then make that decision that I don't like this company, but I'm going to buy what you make?
To be fair, I drive an old Beetle, and they have a pretty checkered history with people like me.
But it's just the diesel gate.
I mean, further back.
Oh, right. Well, yes, we all have to look past that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Alex.
Well, I mean, I used to own a Citroen SM. Mm. I loved that car, but I hated the ownership of it. So we can be conflicted in life. It's okay. Look, my Tesla, it's been actually perfect. It's been perfect since the day I bought it. And for driving a long distance in a straight line, the autopilot it's a really good cruise control. I don't know anyone else who makes a better cruise control. But it's not the car I want to drive, you know, in the canyons outside Malibu.
Right.
For that, I've got an old 911.
And I think there's actually a valid point about not, you know, being ambivalent about Tesla, which I feel like most people don't think you get a right to. Because Tesla seems to be either cult-like Tesla stans who just adore everything, or people who are accused of hating Tesla or shorting their stock.
Right,
and
right.
I think there's a space in the middle. Like, you can like Tesla. I think the Model 3 is actually a really well-designed car.
It's a great car.
I have all kinds of problems with the way Tesla is run and things they say. And I think it's certainly possible to be somewhere in the middle, even though it doesn't seem that common, but it's
no. I'm right there. I feel that way. I learn a lot about the company from you guys, but at the same time, that car catches my eye every time.
It's a packaging triumph.
Does a Cybertruck catch your eye?
You want to weigh in on that? It is the morning after that debut of that strange vehicle.
That's perfect. That's kind of it right there.
You were stunned silent.
Pardon me. You know, I want to write an op-ed saying why I love the Cybertruck. I mean, there is a market for it. It's going to sell in numbers at least as good as, like, the Lamborghini, like, LM 2002. What was it called?
The 002.
Rambo Lambo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to sell to anyone who wants an F-150, but would you rather have that or, like, the Aston Martin SUV?
The Aston Martin SUV, for sure.
I don't know
what I'm looking at when I look at what
it's
I saw last night.
A crude looking thing.
Yeah, it looks like we were saying. It looks like something our kids made in shop class.
Yeah.
You know, it worries
it's
me.
I
don't mind provocative design, and I don't, you know, mind any of that. It just looks odd, and the whole presentation was odd, and it makes me wonder, you know. It's not polished. At the same time, you know, I saw a few of these presentations of new cars this week, and they're boring, you know. So at least you could give Elon Musk that.
Yeah, it's not
compliment.
Like everything else.
It wasn't boring. That was not a boring
no.
press conference.
I don't think it's
a
better truck.
It's a big cactus to swallow.
Yeah. Well, tell me what you like about it, why you think it's so promising.
I don't like anything about it, but I love that I love that we're talking about it, and he's a great entertainer. And you know, if Car Torch, I mean, I've read your book. I love you for years, Spike. Come on. If all we wanted from a vehicle was to get from A to B, Lamborghini would be out of business. Porsche wouldn't exist.
Sure.
Ferrari would be gone. We'd all drive a Prius.
Yeah, cars are not rational things. Yeah. Totally agree.
And that truck is the least rational thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
All right, so big win. It's a win.
It's a win. Okay. For me, it's a question mark. And Torch, what are you saying? He's not going to weigh in yet.
I agree with Alex that having something different is fantastic. I love seeing the novel. I love that we're talking about it. I love that it's interesting. That doesn't mean it's good.
Look, I got more excited about the Land Rover Defender. Look, that was unveiled the other day.
Yeah.
That looks like something you can buy and drive, and it has lights on it and mirrors. And you can trust the company.
But looking like a Bollinger or a Rivian, those things are hot.
Yeah. I think Bollinger, if also something with zero curves, did a better job of making a truck because it actually looks like something you could use and improves what a truck does. I don't see that for the Tesla.
Bollinger has to be the most excited this morning. They have to be the most excited.
They have to be worried.
Because they were worried before yesterday that we thought their car looked like it came out of shop class and wasn't finished. Now they're like, look at us.
At least we didn't smash our windows when we started to introduce it. They have that too.
And what is that? That is so confusing.
Dude's a showman, man.
I still think it could be a prank. I still think it could be a prank.
I was convinced until the moment the feed went dead that they were going to bring out the real truck. Yeah. I actually thought that at some point after they smashed the window, that the windows and body cladding would fall off.
Yeah, we were all talking.
The vehicle would be underneath.
We were expecting them to like lift that crude like polygon body up, and there would be the real truck under it.
Yeah,
I will get to your movie. Don't worry. I want to ask you about what you said about Tesla Model 3 and their autopilot is really just cruise control. What do you mean when you say that?
Okay, so from a technical standpoint, Tesla has a very good radar cruise control, although many other cars do, and they have a very good lane-keeping system, which very few cars have.
Mm-hmm.
So you put them together, and you have what's called autopilot. It's just a marketing name. So if you're driving in a straight line or a fairly straight road for a long distance, their system is the best of its kind. It's a very, very, very good cruise control with lane keeping. And no other company has anything like it except Cadillac with Super Cruise. And the Tesla is usable in more places. It's a little less safe because it doesn't have a driver monitoring system like Cadillac does.
Yeah.
So if you want that type of system and you want an EV, there is no choice but Tesla today.
I haven't used the Cadillac system, but I keep hearing how good it is. Yeah, but from – let's take Volvo, for example. How is it different than Volvo's Pilot – what do they call theirs?
Pilot Assist.
Yeah, Pilot Assist, right?
So the Volvo also has radar cruise control. The radar cruise control in a Volvo, I find it to – I mean, it's hard to describe. It's a little more porous, and it's like a softer, weirder system in terms of, you know, braking and acceleration. And also, I think not as good in preventing other vehicles from cutting in front of you.
Right.
Which is really inconvenient. The big one, and really the two big ones in the Volvo, the lane keeping is nowhere near as good as on a Tesla. But the big one is that when the system in a Volvo, and almost anyone else's car besides Tesla, engages or disengages, it's a two-stage system. You don't turn it like on or off. There's like an intermediate step where you're not sure. The visual alerts are very small. There are no audible alerts when it engages or disengages. And as a result, they have a thing called mode confusion. One doesn't know what the system is going to do or even if it's on. And that in a Tesla, you know it's on.
Right.
And so all of these systems, and I always try to be really clear about this, and this is what my issue with Tesla, these systems are only as good as the driver's understanding of them. If you're a great driver and you pay attention, you're going to love these systems. They're going to make you safer. But if you're not a good driver and you think you know these systems, you're going to be less safe.
And I think that's the issue with Tesla, because I think there's some deliberate obfuscation on Tesla's part as to what this does and is capable of. If you look on their website and their marketing, I don't think it's entirely clear.
Yeah, there's definitely lack of clarity. I mean, I think the big problem – I mean, they're pretty clear about what autopilot does, although the word itself is very loaded. Yeah. I think Tesla's biggest problem here, and it's pretty deliberate, is that they throw the word self-driving and self-driving around.
Yeah, it's on the website, full self-driving.
You guys – you have to understand.
This game they're playing – It's bullshit.
These people, right. Most people don't understand cars on any level. Everybody I know who has a Tesla is like a studio executive. And they're like, yeah, I can turn this on and it will drive me to work.
Yeah.
That's how the message has trickled down to them.
Yep.
So when you use it, Alec, are you touching the wheel every 12 seconds? How does it work for you? Or are you sitting back but paying attention? What do you do? What are you doing exactly?
All right, so I'm doing almost 500 miles a week on autopilot, New York to Pittsburgh, and I keep both hands on the wheel the entire time.
Yeah. That's what you're supposed to do.
At one point when the cars first came out, it was possible to take your hands off for as long as 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
And even longer. And then it was quite easy to put a bottle or, you know, fruit in the wheel.
People actually
and then
sold
you could go for 30, 40 minutes.
You ever seen the autopilot buddy? It was like a special weight designed to sit in the wheel. And people were shoving oranges in there, too, which also worked. So
that guy should be in jail. I mean, the guys behind that, that's crazy.
I agree.
Today, with the auto, you know, over their updates, they've evolved the system to the point where you have, I think on my car, you can take your hand off. For I think you have 18-second interval, and then it gets shorter and shorter. So it's much harder today to abuse the system than before. But the thing Tesla's missing, and this is going to become mandatory in Europe and eventually in the United States, is a camera-based driver monitoring system. If they had
like
that,
GM. Yeah.
The system would be amazing. Yeah, and that's what GM has.
So GM has a camera facing the driver watching you.
Which right. also means they have many hours of footage of drivers doing nose picking and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's something Ed Niedermeyer brought
yes
up
and
with
no.
like, the privacy policy of Tesla was concerned with. Like, what would Tesla do with that audio and video aside from all the GPS information?
I mean, they could defend themselves in court if things happen. Like, if there's a wreck and they have video of you clearly not paying attention, I think, of course, they're going to use that.
Why do we want a camera in our face? You know what I mean?
Maybe then I wouldn't have left my hair the way it is for so long.
A camera in the Model 3, but it's not used for driver monitoring. It's sitting over the rearview mirror to monitor the cabin. We don't know if it's recording today. We just don't know. It could be.
Do you have any idea what kind of view that thing's getting? Have you ever seen footage from it? Like, what is it seeing?
I haven't. It's a wide-angle camera, though.
Yeah.
You can
wow.
Our friend Bosey, I think, pulled out one from one of these cars and looked at it.
And I'm just trying, again, just looking from the outside in, why do you even want any of this stuff? If you're saying to me you put your hands on the wheel, what are you doing with that time that you weren't doing before?
Podcasting. Listen to your podcast. I'm not podcasting from the car, but, you know, I drive
you understand
so
what
far
I'm saying, though? Because to me,
of
all
course.
It sounds like is you're not using your feet. Feet-free driving, right? You can put them flat.
I mean, I guess, how much time do you spend in traffic in the L.A. area?
Quite a bit. But, again, if I'm disengaged from it, I understand that. So you're saying, like, the stop and the go, you can kind of just relax a little more and not pay as close attention. I'm just saying, what benefit do you get personally from this?
My stress levels are much lower. I can take calls, listen to things, you know, and enjoy them a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And if the conditions are optimal, it is safer. But these people who are using the system in, you know, winding roads without dividers
right,
between
right.
like the direction of the traffic are idiots. And Tesla should limit that.
Right.
But there's no doubt that if you drive a long distance using it and in the right conditions, it's great. It really reduces your fatigue and stress. You know, I get to the other end of a trip and I still want to go do something instead of just go to bed.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, I guess if I think about if I get in an old Mercedes diesel and I know I can't keep up with traffic, sometimes I feel very relaxed because I know I don't have to race. Yeah, the pressure's off.
Every drive for me is like that.
And then if I'm in this adaptive cruise control that you're talking about, I don't really have to try. I don't have to cut anybody off. If anybody jumps in front, who cares? Right?
But then you're still in.
Want that. I mean, I love driving, but I hate traffic. Who doesn't
want
that?
Yeah, I get it. All right, good. Good. Let's talk about the new movie, Apex, The Secret Race Across America. How was the premiere? Everybody in the world, the automotive world, was there, including, as you pointed out,
all of
the Porsche people. I got invited to a Porsche dinner in my neighborhood, which I went to, and everybody was at your thing. So congratulations for that. Tell us about the movie.
It is the first and maybe the last documentary of its kind about the, you know, true history of the Cannonball Run and the successor race, which was called the U.S. Express.
Okay.
So we have this footage from the 70s and 80s, which has never been seen, and it's combined with footage of the drive that David Maher and I made cross-country in 2006.
So wait, just set up for the audience, that because I don't think they fully understand what you just said, that there is a real cannonball run that happens that's been going on since, what, 79 or so?
71. Actually, 1915.
1915 was the first Cannonball Run? Explain.
There was a guy named Irwin Baker. His nickname was Cannonball. He got hired by Cadillac and Stutz and Gardner to drive cars cross-country and demonstrate that internal combustion polluted less than horses and trains, that it was reliable and safer than other forms of travel. And he did this every year for like 20 years. And then in 71, Brock Yates, one of the editors of Car and Driver, decided to name this illegal race after him. And that's when the Cannonball Run, as we know it, was started.
Wow. Now, you use the term illegal race. Is it still an illegal race? I mean, you know, I think we all think of Burt Reynolds and racing across.
DeLuise.
Right, DeLuise, and trying not to get stopped by the Smokies. And you know, what exactly was this race in the 70s, and how has it evolved until now?
So from 1971 to 1979, groups of cars between 10 and 40 or 50 cars would go across from New York City to California, L.A., or Redondo Beach, as fast as they could. So totally illegal. There was a fender bender in 79, but other than that, there were just a few tickets. And then the film rights were sold, the movie came out, and it really wasn't possible to do that kind of thing, or so everyone thought. In 1980, several Cannonball veterans decided that the actual Cannonball had too much attention and they should take it underground again. And so this race called the U.S. Express began, and there was 10 cars, and they drove a lot faster than the Cannonballers, and they didn't tell anybody. It was completely secret, and it ran through 1983.
What kind of speeds were they hitting?
That's where our movie really picks up.
He's saying they drove...
In the 80s era races, the U.S. Express races, what were the times that they were doing for a coast-to-coast race? Like, how quickly could they do it?
On the last Cannonball in 79, the record was 32 hours and 51 minutes.
Oh.
And on the final U.S. Express, it was 32 hours and 7 minutes. Everybody on the Express dreamed of doing it in 30 hours. But in the final race, somebody leaked the list of drivers to the authorities, and they were all pulled over in a huge group. And the police said, look, if you do this again, and everyone's going to prison before the next race even starts. And that was the end of those races, again, or so we thought.
Mm-hmm.
So, in 2006, when I learned of this, I went across with my friend David Maher and a filmmaker named Corey Wells, and to determine if it was possible to break that time. And we did break it. And that's part of the movie.
That's 31 hours
today,
and 4 minutes, right?
Yes, 31 hours and 4 minutes.
Your BMW M5.
correct. Today, I guess partially inspired by the fact that I did it, two more races emerged. One of them is called the C2C Express. The other was called the 2904. And these are kind of a combination of Cannonball and like the 24 Hours of Lemons, where the cars would go across, but they had to be built like before 1980 and be under like $3,000. And those races, their times approached my time. And in very old cars, which is almost incredible. It's shocking to me. So that's the modern era, I think, ended last year when the last C2C Express took place, and they shut it down because the cars, even the vintage cars, were crossing the country too fast, and the organizers felt they should kind of bring it to an end.
Wow. So Apex, the film, covers your run, right? I know it starts with
run,
you in the car breaking down.
Yeah,
what do you want to tell the listeners about without ruining the ending? What do you want to tell them?
Well,
spoiler alert,
everybody. It's kind of well known. Several people have since gone across even faster than I did.
Wow.
But, I was always really inspired by Roger Bannister. He was the first guy to break the 4-minute mile, the runner, back in the 50s. People said no one would ever break a 4-minute mile. And people tried for a long time. And then he did. And after he did, more people broke it, and the world was shocked. But today it's fairly common. So I'm pretty sure that because of connectivity and surveillance and the modern world we live in, this era, I don't think it's going to end, but I don't think anyone else is going to ever make a movie like this again, because to get a spotter plane and bring camera crews and then wait 10 years or more to release it to avoid criminal prosecution, I'm really proud to say that I did it. I wouldn't do it again. I was told by a friend of mine who works in for the government that someday, if human driving is banned, that this movie will be public evidence number one.
Wow. And you, how did you get Ice-T to do the narration for it?
Because our mutual friend J.F. Mutual, the director, one of the directors of the film, changed his tire in 2005 on a rally.
Wow!
And a guy named Swirly,
when he was finished, he said, "If you ever need someone to narrate a movie in the future,
yeah, man,
that's not the connection." He had developed a relationship after changing the tire and reached out to him.
Ice-T takes tire changing.
I mean, that's 14 years ago.
Quiet about it.
What?
Well, you know, I think you remember. I don't think a lot of people. You break down into Pagani or McLaren. How many people want to stop to help? Not so many.
Right.
Well,
right.
Maybe. It depends where you are. But you know, Ice-T's a nice guy, and JF, he can be nice. And I was really lucky that happened.
Well, that's amazing. Well, the film is called Apex, The Secret Race Across America. You guys got to check it out. It debuted on NBCSN. Where there's a lot of Drive content. You're listening to Alex Roy, editor-at-large at The Drive, and the filmmaker and star. Are you the filmmaker or just the star of this film? Is J.F. Muzio?
I'm one of the stars, one of the filmmakers. It was a team effort, I like to be fair.
And if you guys want to check it out, which you definitely do, thank you, by the way, for that secret code so I could watch it. You got to go to iTunes, right? It's on iTunes. We can watch it on our big Apple TVs now.
It's going to be in iTunes on December 21st.
December 21st. Perfect. Well, when you're back in town, you got to come in and chat with us. I want to talk more about these autonomous cars that don't exist.
I'd love to help.
And what are you doing in Miami?
I'm actually at an autonomous vehicles conference where I explained to several state senators and safety officials how we got away with the Cannonball Run record.
And what are you telling? What are you telling the senators about autonomous driving? Like that it doesn't exist?
Well, I mean, you know, I actually am quite confident that it will in limited areas. But that, like anything, you know, overpromising and under delivering is the death of almost anything.
Were you the guy, and I don't know if it was you, but someone was talking about like an air traffic control system as being possibly the most successful system, in that all the cars would be talking to each other on the road and know where each other was.
That's kind of the plan for all of this. They want to do vehicle-to-vehicle communication.
Right.
And even GM in the 50s made a instructional film or like a promo film where they described a system a lot like that, where there were like spotter towers controlling the cars. So that concept has been around a while. Have you ever seen that film, Alex? With the Firebird?
Yeah, I've seen that movie.
Yeah.
You know, if we can't keep potholes filled in reliably, and I'm not too optimistic about like a city or nationwide infrastructure that makes those things work. You know,
so who is going to succeed? Just tell us who you think will get it right first. We won't hold you to it. Just what's your guess? Google
it's
Waymo?
It's a hard question to answer because I work for one of the companies that are developing these.
Who's that?
There are going to be several winners, and it's going to be based on where they deploy and whether people want to get in them. So if you're a company and you're building an autonomous bus and another guy builds an autonomous, you know, two-person mover, well, it depends. You know, if you put the bus in the wrong city, no one gets on, you're going to lose after billions invested. Mm-hmm. So the right vehicle in the right area and, you know, and with the right customers, it's going to work.
I think unmanned delivery will be big.
That's why companies are in Florida.
Mm-hmm. And that could be anyone. It could even be any of these our car manufacturers that pull it off. Yes or no?
I mean, look, there's some guys here in Florida that only deploy them in retirement communities. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. you know, Waymo's in Phoenix. You know, the weather's pretty good. Makes sense.
And plus, Ford, if an old guy dies, gets run over, are we really crying?
I drove
in. Is that what you're saying?
Some in Boston that were the same thing. It was like basically assisted living community. But those places are great because you know what goes on them. Nobody minds driving super slow.
Well, what happens in like, you know, wintery, weathery places with autonomous driving? Like the 7 inches of snow
today
on the ground, huh?
They,
The state of the art today is not gonna work in peak winter. But look, what is the goal here? For me, my goal, how did I get my job doing this? Because I believe private ownership and human-operated cars are going to last forever. Not everywhere, but they are going to last. But I also believe that that people like me in the future will be willing to pay to have a Porsche 911 or a Mustang or whatever that has an autonomous mode as an option.
Mm-hmm.
And so
for sure.
My dream car is a sports car that won't let me crash, that I own, and I can take my hands off the wheel when I choose.
Mm-hmm.
To get there, we've got to take some steps, and that's going to start with getting rid of traffic in cities by having autonomous vehicles that work better than human drivers in cities, because that's where the business is, I believe.
Alex Roy. There he is.
Good to talk to you, Alex.
This has been fun, you guys. This is a different kind of show for us. Thank you for calling in. Alex, we'll say goodbye to you. Interesting guy, huh?
He
really smart. You guys, all you guys, you're really bright guys. How did you find the car business?
I don't know, because we're not bright enough for anything else, I think.
What do you want to promote before we go?
Well, I'll promote book, of course. The Robot Take the Wheel. I think in some states it might be required that you buy one, so just check your local laws. Maybe just to be safe, just buy several copies of the book. I really tried to make something engaging and fun to read that tells you about autonomous cars and the value of human driving. Get that. And of course, Jalopnik.com. We crank out every single day. We're cranking out posts like every 15 minutes or whatever. So please read them. Watch our videos.
And where can fans chit-chat with you? What do you prefer?
Twitter's a good place to find me. And I try to respond. Like you can – if you say something to me and you want to hear back, I do my best to try to talk to people because like that.
Talk them into keeping his hair or losing it. That's what you need to do.
Yeah, let me know.
And I like that Instagram app. You can follow me there and you can message me there and I check everything. Even if you're not – if we're not friends, I'll accept you. I'll talk to you as long as you don't threaten me with death or dismemberment.
You're a magnanimous man.
And lecture me about what's wrong with gas engines and that I'm part of the problem because I like gasoline in my engine.
That's right.
Please.
You're a monster.
I like everything. I love you all. Happy holidays. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
All right, guess what? There's a new podcast, Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. Welcome to the family, Mike Tyson. I wonder if he's going to bring that tiger from The Hangover. Listen as Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, pours his soul into conversations with fascinating minds, celebrities, and athletes, along with his cosmic millennial sidekick and former NFLer, Eden Britton. Kid Dynamite dives deep into the issues impacting all of us. The podcast will change the way you see the world. Don't miss Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.